5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Happy Sunday, Croc Nation. Dr. Tommy and Ellie here with you with another episode of the Croc Podcast. Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin on the other side of the glass. Angel, happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday to you. And I'm hoping that this could possibly be the last time that we record from one venue and another.
Actually, we're going to give it a try. I think we have very good quality on this computer, my wife's computer. So I think it's good luck. And we're going to give it a go. And today is a very sad day for me, Angel.
I did not expect that. You took me off. I'm like, okay, why?
Today is, I was hoping you were going to ask me why. This is truly the last episode in the module of kindness and cancer care. And I have to tell you, as much as I made fun of it last week and said that it was our 829th episode of that module, the truth of the matter is it was a very special module to me. Would you like to know why?
I was going to ask you why. If you were going to ask me, I was going to say, can you please tell us why?
Because in that one silly 6-page article, there was so much depth, there was so much texture, there was so much impactful information, and it took into account so many different important things that one paper really moved me, and not just moved me, I think made me better, if you can understand that, because what we're going to, and I'll tell you what we're going to do today, which was going to tie it all together so nicely, is that the role of kindness in cancer care is so missing in the experience of the cancer survivor. And it's so simple. And this paper is not a complex paper at all, but in its simplicity, it really gets to the truth. And I think that what I wanted to do, I never wasn't even going to do this episode. I thought that we would have had enough just going through those six subtopics, but I thought it would be nice to walk a theoretical patient through the process of their care and highlight how each of us can show kindness to this patient and highlight each of those six subcategories. Do you remember the six subcategories?
You know that I had this suspicion that you were going to ask me all of the episodes.
Yes.
So I have to be honest, I wrote them down.
Okay. That's not cheating. That's called bringing in notes. That's nothing wrong with that.
All right. So we started off, it was in our official episode 49, by the way, started this whole thing. So it was, the one was in the role of kindness, which is deep listening.
Yes.
Then it was empathy.
Yes.
Timeless of care.
Yes.
Gentle honesty.
Yes.
Practitioner generosity.
Yes.
Caring for the caregiver.
Correct. Well done. That's an A+, Angel. That might have been the only A you ever got in school right there.
I have to agree.
You are a beauty school dropout, Angel. What am I going to tell you?
I think I have a tear in my eye.
There you go. So let's get going. What do you say?
Listen, I'm tearing up. Let's go. I'm ready.
Okay. You just got diagnosed. You just got called into your oncologist's office and they give you the bad news. They say, yes, the tumor was malignant. It was a type of tumor that requires you to have radiation. So here's where we're going to start the clock. We're going to start the clock right from the moment you are given a number to a radiation oncology department and you call and you speak to the front desk. And that's where we're going to start the episode. So phone rings and Sandra or Millie or Kathy pick up the telephone and they say, Garnet Health Radiation Oncology Department, how can I help you? And from there, the person is afraid, lonely, hears about radiation, is very afraid of that concept of radiation. And from that moment on, that's when the kindness should begin. So any one of those ladies, it's their job from the minute that phone rings, that they have to start giving a sense to that patient that the place they're going to be going to get their radiation is a place of kindness, that it's a safe place. It's a place that's going to be a place, a refuge, where they can feel that they can be themselves, where they won't feel that someone is going to take advantage of them, or that they're going to be only interested in their health insurance, or only interested in getting them in and getting them out like a machine, just trying to push them through the system. They want to feel like individuals. So from that first moment, there is an opportunity for kindness right from that telephone conversation. And then the front desk is given another level of importance, and that's that first face-to-face meeting when you come to that glass. Now, unfortunately, with coronavirus, there is a separation between the patient and the front desk. But I feel very confident with our staff that they're able to melt that that transparent glass to make that patient feel loved. So it's about, hey, are you Mr. Jones? Welcome. Thank you for coming. I know you must be afraid, but here's what we're going to do today. First, let's get some business out of the way. Let's, you know, have you fill out this form. Let's get your health insurance all plugged in. Let's make sure everything is done properly in the system. And from there, you're going to go in and see the doctor and the nurse, and they're going to tell you what's going on. And then from there, it's the doctors and nurses and the working of the clinic's necessity to not leave that patient in that waiting room for a prolonged period of time. We try to get people in exactly at their time. Now, I know that sounds unusual, and for the croc survivorship, they might say, what are you talking about? I'm in my doctor's office for hours and hours and hours. And I say, why do you accept that? We can't accept that anymore. That's not kind to leave someone afraid, waiting to see their doctor or their nurse for hours. That's completely unacceptable. If you were going out for dinner and you went and sat down and you didn't have a waiter come to see you for an hour, you're walking out of that restaurant, right? So why is it the same? Why isn't that kindness shown on that level? And now we're going to get to the sixes. So first thing we're going to do is we're going to do some deep listening. So you know what I do, and we've had a podcast on this, is the first thing is you want to know something about the patient, because theoretically you should know everything about their cancer. You should have a chart. You should have all their paperwork. You should have all their records, and you should have read them, and you should have memorized them, and you should have seen all the films and checked all the pathologies. So that's already in your head. So the thing that's missing is the patient, him or herself. What are they all about? What is their essence? And I would encourage our listeners to go back in time to listen to that podcast. Maybe Rod could cue that in for us, because I think that would work nicely with this concept with kindness. And then you want to find out, is that person, is that a Marine hero who served in Vietnam? Is that someone who met a president? Is that a famous jazz singer? Is that someone who was witness to a historical event, like being in the Twin Towers on 9/11, or I had a patient who witnessed an assassination attempt on Harry Truman? I mean, you need to listen to these patients and listen to these stories. And then the deep listening really begins, because now you want them to tell you their story about their cancer in their own words. And you don't want to cut them off, and you don't want to interrupt them, and you don't want to be looking at your computer or on your phone. You want to give them 100% of your attention. So deep listening means being quiet, being present, listening intently, eye contact with the person. Get off your computer, get off your phone, and listen. So now we've already established the primary call of contact. Number two is the face-to-face meeting. And the first part is that deep listening, getting to know the patient. Now our patient, Mr. Jones, feels so much better, so much more at home. He feels, and we'll use a he for this, you know, particular instance, but it could be a her or whatever. They feel now they're sitting on a couch in our home, in our living room, and we're serving them a cup of tea. Empathy is a problem in our entire society. We are, unfortunately, in our human journey right now in 2022, we are a species, not just a country, not just the Northeast, not just the New York metropolitan area, but we are a species, global species of self-centered narcissists who really only care about ourselves and what the world, how the world revolves around our axis. And we lost that ability to be able to feel that pain of another person or to be able to put ourselves in their shoes. So now we begin part two of this journey of the cancer survivor, Mr. Jones. Now the practitioner, the doctor, the nurse practitioner, the physician assistant, the nutritionist, the speech and swallow, physical therapist, occupational therapist. When things go bad, an angel in your life, I've listened to every one of your podcasts since we've met, and I know you've had hardships. When that hardship hits you, when your life goes spinning off of its axis, I call it the void. Like when everything is good, everything is great. But if your kid is sick, there's a threat to their health, to your parents, or something bad happens. Then what you feel in your body, all of a sudden, it's almost like the bottom falls out, like you're on a ride in Disneyland. And like it's almost like your entire, you know, viscera comes up into your chest and you feel that void.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Mr. Jones is in that void right now. And you have to know that he's in that void. You have to put yourself in his chair. You have to put one of your family members in that chair. You have to recognize and you have to basically dissipate his fear. You have to try to quell that void. Let's try to eliminate that void by being empathetic and understanding where they're coming from and ask for healing, ask our higher power to feel so connected to that person that you almost feel like you're going through it and you're an empath. You feel it, you know what they're going through, even though you're not going through it. And we ask our higher power to intervene on their behalf. And then you've truly established that empathetic connection. And now we go into part three, into the generous acts. It could be something incredibly small, having a patient who was very emotional, maybe calling them the next day, having a patient who you're trying to get off their Decadron and they're starting to have a headache and you want to make sure they're okay over the weekend. So you call them on a weekend. Wow, how's that for just a simple act of generosity? Give them your cell phone number. Like, you know, you're a doctor, you're a nurse. I mean, you're supposed to, like, if you wanted a job, you should have been a lawyer. You know, that's a job. What we're doing is something that's a life, you know, is a life quest. It's like being a priest. It's like being a holy person. You should take that extraordinarily seriously. I have given my famous jerseys, my jersey collection. If a patient tells me they like my jersey and it's their favorite team, I'll take that jersey off of my back and I'll put it right in their lap and it's theirs, you know, not a problem. Who cares? It's a shirt. Like, you know, I had a guy that I took care of. He was terminally ill and we were treating him for metastasis and he didn't have many months left. And he loved Gale Sayers from the Chicago Bears. And I wore a Gale Sayers jersey one day. And he said, wow, Gale Sayers is my favorite player of all time. I took the jersey off. I gave it to him. He started to cry. And for the next 2 weeks that he was undergoing treatment, he wore the Gale Sayers jersey every day. Every day he wore that jersey. I said to him, that jersey is going to start walking by itself. You might want to clean that jersey, buddy. You need to wash that jersey. our nurse practitioners that you met a couple of weeks ago, they're forever making sure that the patients have enough money for gas, or that the people that are driving them, they give them gas cards and grant money. You know, I've been known to, you know, deliver food to a family that's on a death watch, waiting for their you know, survivor to pass. You know, because the last thing they're going to be wanting to do is cook for themselves. Just send them over a couple of sandwiches. It makes such a difference. You'd be shocked, you know, that people, they seem like this is not the time to eat. But, you know, that's exactly the time to eat, to keep your strength when you're going through that emotionality. Very small. I mean, a sandwich, $8 can change a life. I mean, that's small, generous acts. A person, a patient you connect with, loves history, you know, loves a particular aspect of history, buy them a book. You know, they love to read, buy them a book. Who's your favorite author? Who's your favorite poet? You know, buy them a book on Yeats or Tennyson or one of the romance poets, or, you know, Emerson or something like that. You know, the above and beyond generous acts that are so representative of our navigators and our nurses, our angels of mercy, you know, that's generosity. So now we're already listening, getting to know them, expressing and experiencing deep empathy and showing generosity. And now we go into timely care. This is where we put on our advocate hats, not only just to see us, where we do have control, where I'll say to the front desk, I need to see this patient tomorrow, or I need to see this, or I get a call back from a physician saying, you know, my patient called your office. They said, they can't see you for 2 weeks. And I say, oh, really? I'll see them tomorrow. And I'll call the front desk and I'll say, put this person in tomorrow. If I miss a meal, if I miss lunch, you know what? I can miss a couple of meals. It's not going to make a difference. If they need to get in, then they get in. That's timely care. But not just for us, also for the people that we refer them to. You know, we are not a self-contained entity in cancer. We are a multidisciplinary subspecialty. So we need to make sure that they get to their procedures. They might need a Mediport. Mr. Jones might need a Mediport. He might need a gastrostomy tube. He might need to have a few teeth pulled. He might need to go to speech and swallowing, or go to the nutritionist, or have a secondary biopsy. You know, if you were to not ask any questions, or not push, or not be the squeaky wheel, it's possible that you might see the patient on March 1st. They may not start their treatments for 2 to 3 months if you wait for the dentist to see them when they can, or if you wait for the Mediport surgeon to put in the Mediport. I mean, we want this done in a week. We want to be started. You know, you need to make sure that they get their care in a timely manner. There's many balls in the air in our survivors, my dear beloved Croc survivorship people. There's so many things going on. It's your responsibility to make sure you don't drop any of those balls. And that's really where the navigators really shine, for sure, to be able to be the facilitators, the advocates. You know, then we go into gentle honesty. Now we have all of the information. We did everything we needed to do. We got them all their timely referrals. Mr. Jones feels very comfortable with us. He feels very, very safe. And he also feels very optimistic. And he feels confident that the outcome is going to be a good one. So now we have to make sure that we can reinforce that. And if that's not the case, where he's not going to do well, again, these are the key words. We're not going to say, let's just do this, if you remember from that podcast. We're going to say, okay, this didn't work. Now we're going to do this. We're not going to say, let's just do this, or let's try this, or maybe we try that, or we talk about death. And talking about death, there's no problem talking about death, but it's got to be gentle. I have given bad news for 35 years, and there's a way to give bad news, and there's a way to give bad news. And if you can get a person to realize again that entire misconception that there's a difference between dying tomorrow and dying in 2 months and dying in a year and dying in 12 years makes any damn difference in the big scheme of things, they're wrong, because that's where the cancer survivor has their power, because we're all going to die. We're all going to take that final breath. And we need to keep it in perspective, give them the truth, be transparent, but be gentle when we're talking to them about very sensitive things. Also, saying things that aren't even bad. You still have to watch your tongue, because you might give them the image of something or have imagery of something that's scary to them. They're not doctors. They didn't go to medical school. You have to make sure that you explain everything. So it's almost like that my chart. You know, you look at your my chart, you read a report. It might be a perfectly negative report, but the way the medical wording is might scare the living daylights out of you. And it's our responsibility to make sure, whether it's good news, bad news, or indifferent news, that we're transparent, we're honest, and we're gentle. So now Mr. Jones knows what we're doing. He has prostate cancer. He has very curable prostate cancer. We've been very honest with him about his the expectations of care are curative. No guarantees are given. He gets every alternative care. So he knows, you know, what are his options, and all of his questions are answered. A second opinion is offered. You make sure he knows everything there is to know. You involve his family members as well, which we're going to get to in a second, because that's the last layer of protection, that last layer of kindness, and that's the caregiver support. Let's talk about Mr. Jones. He lives in Roscoe, New York. Roscoe, New York is about an hour and 20 minutes from us. There are no other radiation centers between Roscoe, New York and Middletown, New York. Mr. Jones loves to fish. He's a fly fisherman. That's why he lives in Roscoe, New York. But it's not convenient. It's great for fly fishing, but not so great for getting radiation treatments. Mr. Jones has macular degeneration, doesn't really see well, can't really drive in the dark. So are we going to give him a 4:30 p.m. appointment in the middle of winter when it gets dark at 3 o'clock in the afternoon? Absolutely not. What if he has a granddaughter who drives him to treatment? She goes to school. Okay, well, let's give him an appointment after she's done with school. Who are Mr. Jones's caretakers? I'm sorry, caregivers. Who are Mr. Jones's support systems? Let's do that evaluation for them. Let's find the weaknesses in his system, in Mr. Jones's system. What if he has an old jalopy with one of those gasoline alley tires with the patches on it? You know, we need to maybe get a ride for him. We might need to get resources for him. What if they don't have money for gas? Again, those gas cards. We have to also empower that caregiver. We have to make them feel that they're included. We have to be very inclusionary. We have to respect them. And most importantly, we have to actually make them, we have to be grateful that they're there. They are a very hidden resource for us. Sometimes our patients, Mr. Jones, may not have a good comprehension of really where he's at or what he's capable of doing, or if he has understood everything we have told him. That person, that caregiver, can be our James Bond, right? They could be our Jason Bourne. They could be our John Wick. They could be our boots on the ground spies that can help us to make sure they're doing everything we tell them to do. You know, Mr. Jones might have to have a full bladder and an empty rectum before he comes and has his prostate treatments. The caregiver might say, you know, he's not filling his bladder. He's not emptying his rectum. He's not doing what you told him. You know, he's not supposed to be eating this food or that food, and he's having diarrhea and he's not telling anybody and he's getting dehydrated. We can have these people assist us. So instead of like trying to eliminate them, let's recruit them. You know, we want you, caregivers. The Croc podcast wants to make you inclusionary. So now Mr. Jones has had all six layers of that kindness of care. He finishes treatment, and guess what? He's cured. He feels safe. He feels completely ecstatic with his experience. He feels respected. He feels dignified. And it's a win-win-win for everybody. Len Barry, Raina Aldish, thank you for sharing this amazing work with us. So impactful. We did 7 episodes in this module. Can't thank you enough. Angel, your thoughts?
You know, I have a 2-part question. Let's go back to the very beginning a little bit. You had said about how patients end up waiting in, you know, for a long time. I'm a little torn by it. I'll be honest. Yes, a patient shouldn't have to wait, especially in what we're talking about. My question to you is this. Why do you think, if you can't even answer this, patients tend to end up waiting so long?
You know, I can answer that easily. Because they allowed that to happen.
Fair answer.
Right? So if, like, again, Angel, you open up a beautiful restaurant and you serve the, you know, fantastic mofongo, and you serve fantastic pernil, and you serve fantastic sancocho, right? Mm-hmm. But somebody comes to your restaurant and they have to wait 3 hours for all that beauty and all that wonderful, tasty food. Are you going to be in business?
Probably not.
No, not probably. You're gone. You're done. You're not in business. So we've allowed that to happen. You know, now there are circumstances where it's beyond our control. So an obstetrician has a full schedule, and then in the middle of the day, one of his patients, you know, has a placenta previa or some emergency, and he has to leave and take care of it. And then he gets behind by an hour. That can happen. And that's completely understandable. But it's just the system, Angel. It's the way the system is structured. Mm-hmm. The system is structured where we do not care. And I don't mean me, but I mean the entire medical process, which we know is broken, is of the model that if a patient wants an appointment, they're going to have to come, they're going to have to wait. They're going to have to bring a book. They have to bring their iPad. They're going to wait for as long as they have to wait. And that's just the way it is. But it doesn't have to be that way. And it shouldn't be that way. But we have to have them not accept that.
I have to say that it takes us back to the very beginning of the waiting room. That's one of the first episodes. I think that we should definitely do another follow-up episode on this, because I've got more to say on that. But let me move on, because you've answered my question direct, and I appreciate that. My final part is not a question. It's more of a statement. You know, on my show, we talk about random acts of kindness, and listening to everything that you have described, from the actions of what, you know, these caregivers should do to their patients by being honest, by being, you know, having timeless of care and having the empathy. It all ties into the same type of, that's that whole line, random act of kindness, because it's not done because you feel like you have to do it. It's because you want to do it. And to add to that, you know, one of the biggest things that I'm always a huge advocate for is how often we may deal with a storm. And you had described it as a thorn, correct? It's like a thorn.
Yes.
Well, you know, in anything we do in life, we're going to battle a storm. When the storm comes, we have to remember all storms can come, but they will eventually fade away. Maybe not in the sense of what we're talking about, where it still lingers for some people, but ultimately there is a silver lining, which is what you had said about how you describe how things are said. And it brings back the one famous line that we've all been taught to do. It's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Yeah. And it's so funny that all of the things that our parents told us that we thought were crazy, they all are true. Angel, I want to thank you for being so awesome during this module. It was, again, I hate to leave it. I mean, it was such a great module. And I'm not saying that for me. And again, Croc Nation, anything that I tell you that I do in my practice, I'm not looking for any kudos, any thanks, any, oh my gosh. It actually is amazing to me that the things that I say or the things that I do that people say, wow, that's great, or you're great, or this is great, or whatever. It's shocking that it's thought of that way. It should be like everybody should do that. So again, I take no credit for that. I want to take a minute and do our shout outs, our gratitudes. Angel Santana, Have Faith, Let It Begin. You had a birthday week this week. We wish you the best. I really enjoyed co-hosting your show and giving you that beautiful. It was not a roast. It was more of a thank you. So thank you. And I hope you had a good birthday week. Rod Freeman, you and I have been doing a lot of work together. This is going to be an exciting 2 months. We're going to launch the new website. We have a board of directors meeting in April, and we're going to push this forward. We have to get our social media crack in there. We have to make our podcast high quality. We have a lot of work to do. And I want to thank Rod for Small Biz Up for everything he does for us. Michael, John Benzea, Charlotte Larson, for your support, your friendship to the board of directors, but most importantly, Angel, on behalf of you, myself, and the board of directors, to the Croc Nation, to your survivors, this module on kindness and all of the other modules that come together so nicely on the way you should be treated, on the way people should interface with you. I have a homework assignment for you. I don't want you to want this treatment. I don't want you to think that maybe you're worthy of this treatment. I don't want you to think that if you get this treatment, it's like an, oh my God, wow, baby, wow, once in a lifetime moment. I want you guys to demand this kindness. I want you guys to demand every one of those six things. I want you to demand the deep listening. I want you to demand that your caregivers get to know who you are as a person. I want you to demand empathy from the people that you're seeking help from. I want you to demand these generous acts, this timeliness of care, this recognition of your caregiver. You are worthy of everything that Angel and I are telling you, that Len and Raina have written about. You are worthy. We love you. We adore you. We ask that God bless you. We ask that God keep you. We ask that God protect you. And we ask that you have a long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. Join us next week as we start a new module. Haven't figured it out yet, but we'll get there. Have a wonderful Sunday. God bless you. Peace.